This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming at you shirtless, severely bug-bitten, and in my case, underwearless.
We hunt the Meat Eater Podcast.
You can't predict anything.
Dirt Myth, it's been so long since you've joined us. Do you still, you know what I'm going to ask about, right?
There's two or three things I think you will ask.
Well, I got a handful of things I want to ask you about. But mainly the chew man? You still chewing, man?
Yeah, but half. I feel like I've cut it half in consumption.
You know, we get a lot of emails. We get so many I don't even forward them to you anymore. People concerned about your health. People concerned about your chew habit.
It's a relatable issue, you know. I feel like. But it is helpful.
You like knowing that people are pulling for you.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Maybe it's a self-esteem problem. Like, oh, at its sure. Core.
There's some like deep-seated psychological issue maybe or something. Or it was a camaraderie thing with a lot of my mentors in the past. I don't know.
Because you were brought up in the ranching industry.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't want to pass blame, of course.
Yeah. Dirt has a coming of age story about his coming of age story is when he bought his first tin.
My first good.
His first good tin and didn't have to borrow it from ranch hands.
Still chewing, but still conscious of trying to quit.
I was, you know, I don't want to keep hammering at you, but I was going to ask how about your love life, how your truck's running, but
both good,
but I'm gonna spare it and move on to.
You know, Gary did tell me the other day we were traveling together, and it was about 10 a.m. and we were walking through Salt Lake Airport, and he's like, "Man, I haven't had any chew or coffee yet." He's real proud of it.
He made it till 10 a.m. with no chew.
Yeah, I asked Yanni to pat me on the back for it. He was hesitant, but baby steps.
Baby steps.
Why are you down on coffee?
Well, just like anything that you can pull away from that is a necessity day to day, you know, is nice, I guess. Yeah. Any addiction.
My woman quit coffee and alcohol.
For a while, right?
For a while now. I'm thinking about getting back into drinking. You always hear people trying to quit drinking. I'm trying to start back up again.
Baby steps on that too. Just a little sip here or there.
Yep.
A lighter.
I know. I'm desperately trying to get back into it.
Well, I love that at one point you said you didn't give up on drinking. Drinking gave up on you.
I know. And I want to try to reapproach it. It's like, you'll relate to this, Dirt. It's like if you have a breakup with a girl, right? and you reassess and want to come back and fix what was wrong. So I want to reapproach alcohol. Yeah. I'm going to like come back to alcohol and be like, listen, we both know that we had our differences.
But we had amazing times too.
Mm-hmm.
Tenacity.
Mark Kenyon is here. Mark, on a scale of 1 to, what do you like? You like a 5, 10, or 100?
Go 100.
Okay, because you want to have a lot of room to really like
nuanced answer.
Yeah. On a scale of 1 to 100, how excited are you about the live podcast event that we're doing in Columbus, Ohio?
98.5.
Oh, you're that excited?
Very excited. Yeah. Should be a lot of fun. I hear that you're going to let me join.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because now people know.
Yep.
I think that there's no tickets left. I mean, there are some, but I think that by the time this airs, there might be no tickets left. But
so are we just rubbing it in by talking about it,
though? No, because I'm using this to inspire people in some of the other markets where we're doing shows to go down and get some tickets.
And it's close to selling out all the rest, too, right?
Getting there. It's close. It might be too late. But go to meateater.live, folks. Yanni, you're nodding your head. What do you think?
I was just nodding my head because you got to that website, right?
Thank you. meateater.live, and it's the. I think we'll probably be adding more dates. We started out with 4 dates: Tempe, Arizona; Denver, Colorado; Columbus, Ohio. Minneapolis, Minnesota. We might add more, and they're sold out.
Who can we? Can you say who all is going to be there in Ohio with me and you?
Well, we kind of got to finalize with him, but I've extended an invitation to the world's greatest small game hunter,
Mr. Murphy.
Yeah. Not to be confused with our guest, Guy Zuck, who's the world's greatest turkey hunter. Does that make you uncomfortable?
Very.
I bet it does. I bet it does.
You didn't see that introduction coming.
No. I'm setting him up for failure.
We rewind.
By telling him that. Uh-huh. And then another thing, Mark and I are working together now.
We are.
It's like when you become a couple and you start telling people.
Is this official then?
This is official, yeah.
All right.
Mark's working with us at Meat Eater now, so you're gonna be hearing and seeing all manner of Mark Kenyon. And you saw me put you in the hot seat the last time you were on.
You really did too.
That was like
kept coming.
We
back
were already
at it.
Going out pretty steady, but I was hitting you hard to see.
Feeling it out. Can this really work?
Yep.
No promise.
I guess I passed the test.
Yep. So.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I think it's a long-term relationship. I'm not ready to talk marriage, but this is good.
Yeah. We're gonna move in together, though.
Let's not tell our wives.
And then, of course, Giannis Poutelis is here.
Good evening.
And then Poot Magoot. Otherwise known as Chef Andrew Radulowski.
Yep. World class.
World class.
I'll second that.
Yeah, so and over the last couple of days, Andy Poot fixed up for us. Walk us through, Poot, the menu, what we've been eating.
Let's see. What do we have? Well, tonight we had some grilled octopus that came from the cabin up at the fish shack, along with some halibut that was also caught this summer at the shack. We ate some turkey, fresh turkey breast. That was pretty good. Did a turkey piccata.
That was a Laughing Eagle's turkey.
Yeah, yeah.
Mountain lion.
He's a little sour about it. You know how I know? He's sour that his turkey is the one that everybody ate.
Really?
How do you know?
Well, I'll tell you how I know. Because I, not an hour ago, we had two... of those soft-sided Yeti bags, the Yeti Hoppers. I brought one, and Yanni brought one. Size 40s. And we had some friends down for their first ever turkey hunt, and they each got a turkey, and we're bringing them back home to L.A. So whose bag did they take? My bag.
Yeah.
So here now Giannis has a bag, and I say to Giannis, I say, hey, man, do you mind carrying my turkey home in your bag and I'll just get it from you later? And he's like, well, you might as well take it because my turkey's all gone. it was a little passive aggressive-y.
Dead giveaway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was fishing for like a, oh, well, bro, since we ate both of your breasts, you know, I'll give you one of mine.
Oh, is that what you were fishing for?
Yeah, you can pick up on that.
I would give you some of mine, but I'm the only one that didn't buy one, so.
If that's what, the done deal.
No, I was more than happy to share mine. You don't have to do that.
No, I'll go halfsies with you.
I just figured since you had the bulk of the meat you're taking home of our, you know, stashed, that you would take it home.
Yeah.
Mostly yours.
I'm with you. Oh, you know another thing? You know what, Guy, while I have you here, how many years did you live in Missouri?
47 and a half.
So you're checked out on Missouri.
Yep.
Because I want to do a quick correction or clarification. It's not a correction, it's a clarification. We were talking about, we were down in, we hunted in Missouri for turkeys this spring and recorded a show down there in which we were discussing how someone jumped up some quail while we were hunting turkeys, and they were surprised they had jumped up some quail. And it got into, hey, what, we kind of kicked around, like, what happened to all the quail that used to live in the Ozarks? And a guy wrote in with a 1, 2, 3. He wrote in with a 3-point, 4-point thing explaining why there's no quail in the Ozarks. The guy that wrote in to explain this is a feller that I've known through. He's like an email friend, Clay Newcomb, and he publishes a magazine called Bear Hunting Magazine. I didn't hear this from him. Do you know who that is?
I've heard the name, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Was Fesky one of the four?
Yep. Well, I'm going to give them all good calls. So I know now that you're checked out on this subject. I heard that this guy rides a mule up into the mountains in the Ozarks.
True story.
And spot and stalks blackberries with a mule. That's not something you hear every day.
Not something you hear every day.
And you understand that to be true?
I grew up on mules, too. It's a trading post and stuff in Missouri. Mules are pretty popular. Hunt coons off of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, he goes on to say, here's what's... he says that there was not a good answer given to why there aren't quail in the Ozarks anymore. Fescue and Bermuda grass now dominate the landscape because of the rise of cow-calf cattle operations.
Are you man?
You agree with that?
100%.
This part of the country now supplies a lot of the Midwest feedlots with steers, and the non-native grasses are better for cattle. Before cattle was big, agriculture, native clump grass provided better habitat for quail. Goes on to say, part two, there's not as many subsistence-type farms anymore. From the turn of the century into the 1980s, there were lots of small farms that just provided great habitat. We used to have a lot more edge habitat.
Yes.
Our quail populations began to suffer in the early 1980s and have never recovered. Here's an interesting one. You like that one?
I totally agree with that. And part of the small farming that he's talking about is people spent their time taking care of their farms and their families. They didn't spend it trying to brush hog every weed and stick that made their field look like it was overgrown.
Got you.
You know, now we're a fence-to-fence farming community and a fence-to-fence cattle grazing community, and there's nothing left for a quail.
Earlier, did you hear me mention the name Kevin Murphy as the world's greatest small game hunter?
Yep.
Yep. Very avid. He runs squirrel hounds, and he runs beagles.
Really?
He used to like to hunt quail, but where he lives in Kentucky, quail are gone too. I bring that name up because he prefers to hunt cottontails on Amish farms and has a large network of Amish acquaintances and friends. And he hunts because they still dirt. He describes they still farm dirty.
Yep. A horse and a plow.
Yep. So there's a lot of like when crops are picked, there's a lot of stuff still on the ground. Yep. They leave big windrows. They leave brush strips. And he said that's where all the game lives. And he says, he's generalizing, of course, but he says they also tend to be hell on predators.
Which makes sense. Yep.
Point three. Metal T-post. I need to read this one. Oh, okay. Yeah. Fence to fence. So the advent of the metal T-post, cleaned up with herbicides and or modern brush hogs, have replaced old fences that primarily grew up into brush hedge. So half of the keep-in capacity of these fences was barbed wire strung between trees, and the rest was native brush. This produced great edge habitat that quail thrive on.
Man, he's 100% correct.
Then he goes on to cat recap. As I understand, the dominance of non-native grasses, metal T-posts, and modern mowing machines have been the demise of quail. My grandfather, Lewin Newcomb, was a regionally known bird dog trainer in the Wichita Mountains. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
In the Wichita Mountains of Arkansas. Part of my passion for wildlife conservation was fueled by watching him groan for the days of good quail hunting during the last 25 years of his life, at which point there just weren't quail. He died in 2014 at the age of 94 and talked about bird dogs until the day he died.
Unfortunately, the quail died a long time before he did.
Yeah, yeah.
My grandfather and my dad used to hunt them. I mean, that's all they did. My dad tried to get leave from Vietnam to come back just to not to spend Christmas or Thanksgiving with anybody, to quail hunt, because they had such a high population of quail in the late 60s and early 70s.
So how did that request go over?
He made it.
He did?
Yeah, he got pictures of him and my grandpa hunting quail. And I mean, like you said, in the early 80s, we had really, really bad winters back to back. We had a sleet storm that it rained on top of. We got about 4 to 6 inches of sleet, and then it rained on top of that. And we didn't go to school for 28 days. It froze and got down below zero, and we were finding whole coveys of quail froze together. butt to butt in a circle. They roost, the cubby roost.
Just froze dead like that.
Froze together. And it never come back after that. And that was about the time fescue and Bermuda grass started. And about the time the big machinery started. About the time cell phone and electronics started. It all tied together to, it was a perfect storm for the quail population.
You might not know this about Dirt. Did you know that he once bagged a quail at night with a walking stick in Mexico?
No.
Cat-like reflexes. I thought it was a night bird, but turned out it was a quail.
He later...
He killed the last one.
There was plenty down there.
It was a Mearns. We were doing like a late-night death march in the dark, and he sees it. And later was trying to tell someone the story. I can't remember who was overhearing him tell the story, and he gets to the part where he has a name what the bird was. And rather than saying he didn't know, he goes, yeah, it was a night bird.
It was really tasty. That was my first quail I ever ate, actually. You stepped me through the process.
Yeah, we just cooked
it.
Or
you cooked it. Yeah. I ate it. It was delicious.
You bring up a great point with Texas and Mexico. No fescue, you know, especially South Texas and West Texas. Quail populations are through the roof.
Is that right?
Through the roof.
Yeah, think about when we went down and hunted.
Oh, yeah, man.
Near, yeah. What was it called? Eagle
with
Pass?
With Ben O'Brien. Eagle Pass, Texas.
Yeah.
So was it in, Guy, was it in Missouri that you were brought up, that you were raised up with a turkey?
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Well, I was 7 or 8. My dad got a bronzeback turkey that we raised, and he was my buddy. And first year, he was all right, and then we hit that first spring, and he turned into not being my buddy anymore.
Because he was becoming into his own.
Coming into his own. And
that's a euphemism.
Yeah. And before that first spring was over, you couldn't walk from the house to the car without him attacking you. And he wouldn't be mean throughout the year, but when springtime would come around, he would. And my mom, she would carry a wiffle ball bat. And if you misplaced your wiffle ball bat, you got the end of that wiffle ball bat. But she would keep it by the door, and in order for her to get to the car in the morning in the springtime, she'd have to beat that turkey back away from her just to get to her car.
Why did she even put up with that? I mean, why didn't she just say, you know what, I've had enough, and just get rid of him?
I think she thought in my past life I was a turkey, and she knew how much I loved that thing.
Okay.
Yeah, because when we had pet raccoons, my mom hated our raccoons.
But she let you keep them.
And they'd come in the house, and she'd get a landing net. And landing net them and bring them back out of the house, or carry them out of the house by the tail and open the door and throw them out in the yard. And they would like wait by the door. So they knew how to get in. They'd wait by the door and fight their way in when the door cracked.
Nice.
Yeah, but she never threatened to
chop
get
her head
rid
off.
Of the raccoons. Yeah.
Love of a mother.
And you started to learn how to communicate with the turkey.
Yep. My dad got a few bronzeback hens.
No, explain that. What's a bronzeback hen?
It's just a domesticated turkey. It's like a white turkey, but it has coloring.
So it wasn't a wild turkey?
No. There's bronzeback, Spanish black, royal palm, and then just your regular white domestic turkey. All different subspecies, but...
And talk about learning how to communicate with the turkey?
Well, we had a hen named Henrietta. I mean, we were real original on the names. Tom was Tom and Hen was Henrietta. But she stayed pretty docile. She'd get in your lap. That's how I learned to call, was by mimicking her. And where I...
Did she have a vocabulary that that is similar to wild turkeys?
Very, yeah. And she would leave the yard and go up in the woods and breed with the wild ones and come back.
I knew some girls like that.
Yeah,
no kidding. Steve.
And she would have eggs every year, but she never did, never would raise them. But yeah, we had her, I don't know.
Hold on. So she would lay down a brood. Is it a brood when it's an egg?
It's just a nest.
She'd lay down a nest, but wouldn't sit them.
She would sit them, but they just never hatched for whatever reason.
Wonder what that's all about. She was like leaving them too long when it's cold or something?
I guess so. I have no idea, but we never could get... Even one year, my dad got them all and put them in an incubator, and it still didn't work, so...
Huh. That's interesting. We used to have a cat that would eat its young. That cat was named Maud.
That's messed wow. up.
It would.
That is.
I remember one time it laid a whole litter of kittens in my dad's shoe and ate them all.
Oh,
that's terrifying.
Yeah, I don't know any girls like that.
I was going to say, that's a painful story. Any cat lovers out there, that's something different.
Oh, we ran into a, who was there? Oh, Pooter. We ran into a feral house cat today.
Yep, we did.
Hon, we were calling it in with a turkey call.
Yeah, it was curious too.
Yeah, it was like, oh, I'm going to kill this thing, whatever it is. And then it got close and spooked. So, back to this. So Henrietta and Tom. Henrietta would go up and breed and not do it. But I want to get to the part about how, like, in your mind, what was it that you wanted? Like, why did you want to start talking to this turkey?
Just turkey hunting. And
so it was based on turkey hunting.
Yep. It enveloped my soul.
How old were you at the time?
You say it enveloped your soul?
My first one when I was 6, and it was from there on.
You got a turkey when you were 6?
Mm-hmm. And my dad took me out and got a turkey, and we went on to this place called High Ridge, and I look back now, the only thing Dad wanted to do was go to sleep, you know? He'd been out turkey hunting for himself, and this little kid's aggravating the snot out of him to take him turkey hunting, and he, you know, he gets in at 9 or 10 o'clock and says, yeah, we'll go, I'll take you. So I had a little 20-gauge, my grandpa's 20-gauge, and he gave me one shell, and he set me off about 20 feet so I wouldn't aggravate him while he went to sleep. And I know this because I've done this guiding over the years. You turn your back to the hunter and call a couple times and sleep for 10 minutes, and then you wake up. But we hadn't been there 30 minutes, and he called, and I heard a turkey gobble, and I tried to get his attention, and I couldn't get him. I threw a rock at him, threw a stick at him, and that's how I knew he was asleep. The next time the turkey gobbled, he was a lot closer, got the gun up, and walked right up there, and I shot. When I shot, he yelled out loud. It scared the snot out of me, but I got it. It's a little Jake, had a beard about 4 inches long, and I don't know if I've ever got another one that I was so proud of other than that one.
And so then you thought, like, I'm going to learn how to call these things in good.
Yep.
And you had this turkey in your barnyard that you could begin to mimic.
And he would answer and come to you.
Oh, so you could call him in.
Oh, yeah, you could call him in. He would, I mean, he'd respond and come in, but.
So you're playing, like, you're playing Henrietta.
Yeah.
To bring Tom in.
And when Henrietta would leave and go off horn around, he would tear the yard up. He would get beside himself gobbling, and I'd try to call him in. But the thing it was, when he saw you, he wouldn't run from you. He would go into defense, like he would try to kill you. I mean, he would try to flog you.
Oh, because
you.
He thinks that you're
competition,
like,
for...
Yeah, like, yeah. Hey, I'm looking for my woman, and then I find you here.
Yeah, so the first couple times I called him in, it didn't work out so well for me. So I got to carrying that wiffle ball bat, and I tried to call him in and kind of even the odds a little bit. I know this ain't the greatest story, but it's, you know, I was
no,
a kid.
No, it actually is the greatest story.
So as I matured, he matured, and he got to where he wouldn't come in close enough to me. So I painted my little wiffle ball bat camouflage and started wearing camouflage and face paint. And, yeah, if I get him close enough, I'd wear his butt out. And I didn't always win. I mean, there was times that he won. And he was the wildest tame turkey in Miller County, I guarantee you.
What was the county?
Miller County.
So you learned to do this then in your communications with the turkey. You're not using a box call, or you're not using conventional turkey calls.
No. Dad gave me one when I was 12 or 13, and I had a bad gag reflex. But, I learned how to do it. But I could call on a diaphragm decently, but never could use any call like I could my voice.
What was the first call you think you might have learned?
From Henrietta, just a yelp. She would just walk through the yard just constantly making small, little, barely audible noises. Pooh, we heard that one doing it tonight. You know,
I was going to ask you guys about that. This is kind of, we're jumping ahead here.
No, go ahead, man.
we the four of us hunted together, Andy, Guy, Steve, and myself. Andy and Guy were sitting together. Steve and I were sitting together.
Andy is poot.
Yep. And we had a hen come in fairly early, and we got to watch her for what, at least 30 minutes,
yeah,
right? Mm-hmm. And she finally drifted off. I never heard her make a sound, did you?
Nope.
And you guys did.
She was talking the whole time.
That's, you know, it's funny. I want to get into this more, but I remember Will Primos listened to a Will Primos DVD, and he was talking about turkeys make so much more sound than you think.
Yeah.
And he goes, when you're sitting in the woods and one comes real close to you, you realize they're constantly making noise.
Yep. Constantly.
And I never, like tonight, she wasn't in shooting range. You can't shoot a female anyway, but she wasn't in shooting range, but I never heard a peep out of her. I can't believe that you guys just sitting not too far away were listening to her.
Constantly talking. And you don't even know if she's talking to another one or if she's just making noise to appease herself. But I know that came turkey we had, she would do it nonstop. I don't know, there would be times when it would get hot in the heat of the day. Now, I don't mean she called her head off nonstop, but for the most part, I'd say 80% of her day was spent making noises.
The other day we had a hen roll up on a decoy and she spent several minutes trying to figure out what was wrong with it. She'd kind of fan her tail out, walk around it, you know, move her head up and down.
Wouldn't you just love to know exactly what she was thinking?
Yeah, would love to. I was telling Kenyon that if I could have, like, all my questions about turkeys would be answered if I could be in one's brain for 5 minutes.
That's it.
Because I just want to know, like, how precise their thoughts are. Or is it just sort of this nothingness going on in their head? Or is it that they're having, like, complicated thoughts about risk and reward?
They live in two worlds. Everything's fine. Everything's not fine.
She would go up to it and was purring at it, mm-hmm. but also just, like, whistling.
Really cool sounds.
Yeah.
A lot of that. Yeah. A lot of those purrs and little subtle clucks in there.
Those little bitty tiny. It's something that very few people even recognize as a turkey. But they do that to each other to, you know, they're curious. They want to know what's going on, you know. And you see it a lot when they walk up to decoys.
What's the other noise you just made?
Just a purr, just...
What is that? Do that again.
There's all kind of, and the purr, you know, people talk about the feeding purr. Well, there's so many vocalizations from a hen, to another gobbler, to something's wrong, to an alarm. The purr that a wild turkey uses has many different call meanings.
Do the yelp that your old Henrietta used to make walking around the yard.
But what would shock me is she would do that in the yard, and 300 yards away in the woods, a turkey would gobble back at her, you know. Hundreds of yards away. And on a still morning, and that was, you know, a lot of guys talk about now, they don't ever call to a turkey till he flies down. That was something I learned from that hen. She would sit on our barn, which was where she roosted, and she would listen to those turkeys gobble around her. And when they flew down, she would start calling to him.
It was why?
I have no idea. It was fascinating, but it taught me something. Don't ever call to them while they're in the tree. You know, wait till they hit the ground. And she would decide, she would make her mind up. She'd start yelping, and she'd pitch down and go to a different one just about every time.
So what other sounds did you learn how to make with just your mouth?
Coyote, hoot owl, and just any crow call, basically anything that would make a turkey gobble. Or
let me hear the coyote. Let me hear it.
I do it a lot louder than that, but I don't want to break your sound machine.
And then let me and then let me hear the owl.
Yeah.
he lit up the owls this morning.
Oh, man.
Yeah, like these guys were saying you were calling in all kinds of owls.
He asked
pack of owls.
He asked me why I don't owl hoot when we go. And that's the reason why, because it usually ends up like that. I got five owls above my tree, and I can't hear anything.
They were flying around from tree to tree all around trying to find the offending owl.
Can you rip it again? Let me hear it.
That's good.
And then walk me through, so if you can walk through what you understand to be the vocabulary of a turkey. So we talked about a purr. What is a yelp saying? What, when a turkey's yelping, what is it saying to other turkeys?
That it wants company. It either wants company or it wants you to, you know, basically it wants company. That's it. That's their vocalization.
But what is the one they use when they really are going like a dude, when a turkey sounds like a bad caller with a box call? Because they do sometimes do.
Oh, absolutely. The worst turkey callers in the woods are turkeys.
Yeah. What is she saying when she's doing that?
She's ready to breed. She's ready for company. Oh, in the springtime now. She's ready for company. And if you'll hear them do that in the fall, too, and they've usually got split up from the flock, and they're just trying to find. They're gregarious animals. They want to be together. You know, as soon as the breeding season is over, the gobblers get back together, and they're best friends all year until, you know, February, March.
Uh-huh.
And the same with the hens. You know? They're a very strange creature, but they're a creature of habit, and they want company.
You know what I just realized? Can you hold on a minute?
Sure.
We didn't do the list of the food. What distracted us from doing the list of the food, Poot?
Yanni's turkey, or lack of.
Yeah, that was it.
Oh, that's what happened. Do you mind getting back into that?
Yeah.
Speaking of rewinding, turkey piccata.
Yeah, we made some turkey piccata.
No, we missed some stuff because you had some cured salmon that you caught there in the salmon.
Yeah, line. I made some lox for breakfast. Made a smoked caribou kielbasa that we ate several different times.
Did you hit the calamari?
Ooh, yeah.
Oh.
We did some calamari that...
from my home waters.
Yeah.
You got to lay down how you...
Secret spot.
How that was served, too.
That was a... It was a curried calamari with golden raisins, some green onion, pine nuts, and a little curry mango aioli.
How was it consumed? Or in West City?
Shooting shotguns in the headlight of a truck.
Yeah. As it should be.
Yes.
I just want to say you guys all left, and you left the plate out there. That's why I was out there for 30 minutes.
Yeah, handful of calamari. And
what else did we do? Oh,
that seafood sausage.
Halibut and spot prawn sausage.
I think that's my favorite of the week.
Cured some goose pastrami. Couple goose breasts, pastrami. We did
Canada goose breasts.
Yeah,
that's the. I think that dish. If when you hear from people who get Canada geese and they don't like eating them that much, that's what you ought to be making.
Yeah, it's a go-to for sure. Oh, and then
in Poot special, Poot special Canada goose breast pastrami recipe is in the forthcoming cookbook.
Yeah, you can get it there. And, oh, we had some couple of different lunch items where we did I did a roast caribou and made little sliders out of that. And then today we ate some, took a mountain lion roast and smoked through that in the smoker. And we did kind of like a pulled barbecue style with a little coleslaw and all the trimmings. That was pretty good.
You ruined me, Andy.
Dude, it was a wild game extravaganza, man.
Yeah, can never be reached again.
Elk loin.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Over cauliflower puree.
Yep, seared a big old elk loin, cauliflower puree, balsamic drizzle. Yeah, that was really good.
He cooked so hard. He cooked so hard and so long that some essential part of himself was lost. And he was unable to get a turkey.
Yeah.
Because you depleted some sense of vitality that allows someone to.
Well, I chose the wrong day to stay and do all my prep work.
Yesterday, for whatever reason.
Every hunt except yesterday when everybody came back with a turkey.
Guy, what, if you, why was it so, easy to get turkeys yesterday? But the day before was like
before.
Very difficult, yeah, and then today there. Was not that great.
Well, Friday we had what, 40 mile an hour winds out, yeah, of the north,
blowing trees down.
Yeah, trees laying down, and it's, you know, they don't get together that well. They're scared. You know, predators have a better chance of catching them. Everything's moving, and you know, sight's their biggest defense. And we hit it right. You know, they were split up. Some of them were lonely, and absolutely perfect weather. The barometer was low. Everything was just hit right. Cool, and it stayed cool for it was probably 11 o'clock before it really started warming up. It was just absolutely perfect morning for.
So you think it was a response to having had such a nasty day the day before?
I do.
Like if you have a rainy day, then the next day is real sunny and people are more inclined to step outside.
Yep. Depending on the wind and the weather, yep. But when it's clear and calm like that after a day of bad weather, over the years, it's... And also, the next day is usually the worst that you'll have. They're all back together. And, you've got the hunters, you know, around here that didn't hunt Friday or that tried to hunt Friday and knew that Saturday was going to be good, so you had an influx of... How many shotgun shots did we hear Saturday? I mean,
geez, from us alone, a handful.
Yeah, and then there were several from around, you know. Yep. So they noticed the pressure. So that next day, they tend to be off a little bit. I know we heard several turkeys this morning that only gobbled, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 times, and that was it.
And we had one gobble yesterday 100 times.
At least, yeah.
At least 100 times.
At least 100 times. And
I put an end to that.
You did, amen.
I capped him at 100.
At 100. But it gets frustrating, you know, when you have a day like today. But that's why they call it hunting. It's just you live for those days, for yesterday.
Yep, I was telling Mark Kenyon. Or no, I think I was telling Pooter, if it was a sure thing, they wouldn't call it trying to call in a turkey.
Amen.
They'd call it something different.
Call it something different.
Can you make a cut noise, like what a turkey does when she cuts?
I can't do it with my voice.
Really?
Yeah. I can do it with a mouth call. And I used to pack a mouth call to do the cutting so I could yelp with my voice at the end of it. But, you know, I've hunted turkeys for 40 years. I've heard cutting in the wild from a wild hen maybe a handful of times.
No, really? I hear it all the time.
Just don't hear it. I mean, not the continuous cutting that like I was doing today when I was calling. I don't ever hear that.
Me and Yanni do.
Do you really?
Really?
Yeah.
You sure you're not confusing it with just a bunch of clucks?
Would no. you would you define it as like a very aggressive,
yeah,
cluck, sort of?
How do you define it?
Just a series of very aggressive clucks. And she's not scared. She's looking for somebody to. She's looking for a tom, trying to get a response from a gobbler.
So you can't do you can't cut with your mouth.
Right. It takes too much air. I pass out.
Okay. So cut with a slate. Do one up by your mouth. Do one up by your mouthpiece there. What's that turkey saying?
She's looking for company. She's excited. They call it excited yelps. I don't know anybody that's ever talked to one, actually, but...
You don't know anybody that's ever what?
Talked to one, actually, what she's thinking. But I think that she's looking for somebody. She's looking for a response. Whether it be from another hen or from a gobbler.
But and just to be clear, if you just slow that down, and instead of doing a bunch in a row and just do that same sound,
yep,
you just call that a cluck.
Cluck. Yeah. She's walking and looking.
Can you cluck with your mouth?
Yeah. And a lot of times what a hen says after she clucks, you know, I can remember in the 80s growing up, everybody told you, don't make a putt with your call or you'll scare everything in the woods.
Yeah, because you do the sound that they make when they spook.
Yeah, but what she does after she clucks or putts says everything. If she putts and flies off, every turkey in the woods knows something's up. But if she putts and yelps, they're immediately calm. It means a totally different thing.
But here's the thing. If all of these things meant I'm looking for company, then it wouldn't have... They wouldn't all exist. Like, why the redundancy?
Because we do everything backwards. In nature, the hen goes to the gobbler.
No, I'm saying if she wouldn't, like, there has to be some difference. I'm sure we don't know. But if she yelps and cuts and clucks, all meaning I want company, they must all mean variations of I want company.
I see what you're saying.
I want company a teeny bit, but not really.
Yeah.
I want company a lot.
I see what you're saying, yeah. And I've seen hens walking through the woods clucking and yelping and clucking and yelping, and they'll cluck and yelp until they get a gobbler to response and turn and go right to it. And you know from listening to that's what she wanted to do. And I've heard the same hens doing the same things, hear a turkey gobble and turn and walk the other way and get with a group of hens and go off into the woods.
Yeah.
When it comes down to the final of it, she knows what she wants, and until we can figure out a way to get in her head, we're about as far as we can go as a group of hunters, I think.
Can you talk about when you saw a turkey gorging itself on crayfish underwater?
That was at Empire Ranch, and it was unreal. She was walking along the edge of a pond like a raccoon picking. Her head would go into the water, and she had a beard about, I don't know, 7 or 8 inches long.
It was a bearded hen.
It was a bearded hen, yep.
Would you shoot a bearded hen?
Not now.
Would you go to a bar called the Bearded Hen?
Yeah.
We saw. Do you know? Did I tell you we saw a bearded hen last night?
No.
Pencil thin.
Really?
8-inch.
Would you have shot it?
I was hoping that it would come in and Poot could shoot it. That way I could inspect it but not have to feel the guilt. There
you go. That's where I was.
I would be able to then say, like, yeah, I was with a guy one time. I didn't do it. But my buddy shot a bearded hen.
But they'll eat anything. If they can get it in their mouth. I killed a gobbler one time, had bagworms in his, and his whole chest was just moving from all the bagworms he had ate.
And, you mean bagworms like tent worms?
Yep. Sure enough.
And you could see him moving inside there.
See his craw moving.
My wife wouldn't like that a bit.
I got to be honest, I didn't care for it at all.
Yeah. What were you were talking this morning about the hens have the hierarchy as well, and like the vocalizations will change based on their status within that pyramid. Is that?
That's true. And a hen goes into something that's called broody. When she gets a nest, she gets towards the end of her nest, she gets real defensive of her little area and defensive of herself. But they fight, they strut just like a gobbler. They don't make the same, you know, that a gobbler does, but they will.
Let me hear you do that one again.
Mm-hmm.
You know how I do it?
Sounds about the same.
Just an abbreviated version.
So the crayfish thing. How big are the crayfish that was eaten?
I mean, they weren't like what you'd find in a crawfish bowl, but they were, you know, 3 or 4 inches long.
So she's just filling her crop up with those things.
Yep.
The writer, Tom Kelly, Colonel Tom Kelly, who wrote the greatest turkey hunting book ever.
Amen. I
called The Tenth Legion.
Yep.
Talks about them eating mud bugs, which...
Crawfish, yep.
Talks about them eating crawfish.
And I hadn't read his book until after that happened to me, but it's been a long time ago, but I did harvest a turkey and... Because I had to see, you know, what in the world is she eating?
It happened to be a bearded hen.
Yep. And she was eating, had a whole craw full of, and once again, her craw was moving. They weren't near about dead.
Really?
Yeah.
So craw, I never thought about that. Craw is a word for a crop.
Yep.
A craw is a crop. As you learned how to make all these turkey sounds at your farm there as a kid, how did you get into competitive turkey calling? And, like, what is competitive turkey calling?
It's, we're, group of guys get a list of turkey vocabulary, hen vocabulary, and you make each, say it's a cluck or the cutting, you do that, and then the yelping, and it's a series of that, and then cluck and purr, and it's a series of that, and you get judged on those calls.
Do you believe in a call called the fly down? Is it useful to hunters?
Absolutely. Now, that one I have heard a lot.
Is it the fly down cackle?
Fly down cackle. Yep. Yeah. And she, that hen would do that.
You can't
that.
Do that with a slate, can you?
Yeah.
Well, you can? Yeah. Can you do it with your mouth with no call in it?
No. I'll pass out again. But.
Go a little closer to your mouthpiece there, your mic. And that's them. That's the vocalizations they make coming down out of a tree.
Yep.
Sure. Oh.
And I've have heard hens do that a lot, especially in Texas. But when you've
got into doing a competition calling, it was just you were doing just using voice calls.
Now I would have to use a diaphragm for stuff like that, for cutting and for the fly down cackle, but for a basic yelps and the clucking and purrs. And stuff like that, yep.
Run me through a bunch of the just a whole whatever comes to your mind.
Well, the call sequences.
Yeah, run me through like let's say you're at a calling. Well, where were the calling competitions? Let me ask that first.
I took second in the world at Natchez, Mississippi.
Second in the world.
Natural Voice. A guy named Tucker Chris beat me by 2 points. Okay,
but that's what I mean. You just said Natural Voice.
Yeah.
So how can you can't if you're doing the natural voice, you can't have the call.
Right.
Okay.
So you just suffered through it, and that's where I lost it, was the fly down cackle. I just couldn't do it. It sounded like a dead chicken, and I didn't score very high on my dead chicken call.
And that's
either.
What cost you the world championship voice calling.
Yeah. I had 9s and 10s out of 10. You were scored 0 to 10. I had 9s and 10s on all the calls except that one, and I had a 4.
So what was the first time you went to a competition?
I didn't eat for 3 days, and flew down to Natchez, or flew down to Louisiana and went to Natchez from there.
And why were you cutting weight?
I was just nervous to get up in front of a bunch of people. That was pretty rough.
You know, so you were nervous about it well in advance of going and doing it?
Well in advance, yep.
And you signed up. And did you even know what other people were doing with calling?
Had no idea. Had guys tell me.
You just had a feeling you were good at it.
Yeah. Had a guy tell me I had to eat lemons before, and then another guy told me I had to eat limes, and another guy told me I had to eat Hall's cough drops that would clear my throat. And by the time it was over, I couldn't even talk. You know, but it was a great experience, you know. I met one of my best friends for life. There, I mean, we've been friends 30 some years. Met him at that calling contest.
And where was the calling contest?
Natchez, Mississippi. Or Natchez, Mississippi, however you want to say it. Some good friends from down there. Made some really good people. Met some really good people down there.
And how old were you when this was happening?
19, 20.
Okay, now.
I got to follow up real quick. How many other folks were in the voice division?
I think. You know, memory's just a little rough, but I think there were 16 or 18. I know there's some. Mark Drury was there. He's an excellent, excellent natural voice caller. And there's some other people that, you know, it's been 20 years ago that I can't remember. But
you beat Mark Drury?
No. Nope, he was there the year before. He won it 3 years in a row. He was there at the contest, but he didn't call that year. He quit because he was winning it every year. He went into business for himself. The year I competed, he wasn't in it.
Is there a day-to-day maintenance you have to do for your throat, or you know what I mean? Like a singer does their warm-up, do you do something to...
Like, you know, la, 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 la.
Yeah. Do you do
is
that?
Is he man or is he man?
Jeez, come on now.
Stuck in your head now.
I'm going to be singing it all day tomorrow.
Yeah, I didn't realize I had such a hit.
Yeah, you really. It's
because my understanding is when you write a song, it's meant to be to get some people's heads. And is he man or is he myth or myth? Gets into Mark's head and he can't shake it, which tells me that it's a hit.
What's even worse is my wife has had to hear me sing it. And she gets mad at me. And I say, talk to Steve.
I can't wait to get home and sing This Is the Annoying Song. And this is how it goes.
Is he man or is he myth? So you got to warm up. La, 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 la.
The more you call, the better you get at it. The more I practice, the better I am.
All right, so he, at some point, we better do it now. I want you to like get put yourself back in your 19-year-old self. Okay? Here you are. You're in Natchez, Mississippi. Haven't eaten in days. You get up on the stage. Let me set the scene for you. It's a crowd of beautiful women. And you're up on the stage. And you need to start ripping out a wide array of turkey sounds that you learn communicating with the family pet.
That's it.
Do you have to do them in specific order? Or you kind of?
And they'll say, call or do the Yelp of the Wild.
Oh, hand. So we can do this just like a contest. Who wants to be the announcer?
I can do it.
You don't mind being the announcer?
Sure, I've emceed before.
Okay, I'll be a crowd. I'm gonna be a crowd member. Go home.
Contestant number one, could you please start with the cluck?
And then you just do it a few times,
and that's all you do. Just
and
a couple.
That's it. And they'll give it a minute for the judges to
score you. Who's judging? And I mean here at the table.
Oh, I'm not judging. Who's judging in real life?
You know, they get a lot of times it'd be, you know, past callers, people that turkey hunt a lot from that local area. Sometimes they'd have agents do it from that area. You know, people that were absolutely knew what a hen turkey was supposed to sound like.
And this is something put on by the National Wild Turkey Federation?
Yes.
Okay. Did Jay Scott judges the elk calling, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, announcer?
Moving on to the Yelp.
And usually you do it twice.
Dang.
Unaided.
10.
I'm going to try one time. Yep, yep, yep. It's
you can do better four. Than that.
That's like more of a harbor seal.
Yep, yep.
You tried dirt.
Oh, no. Nah.
Give it a try.
Yep, 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 yep.
You got Yanni. I bet Yanni can do like an approximation of it.
Yeah, but my voice is not might in the best place for it, but I can try.
That'd be good.
Mark? That's not bad.
Not bad at all. Good job.
Hit it again. So when you're learning how to do, like, now we're going back in. You're not your 19-year-old self anymore. You're like, whatever.
Thank goodness.
No, you're going to go back to being him in a minute.
Oh, Lord.
But you're your younger self. How did you, like, were you learning to call with no call, just using your voice, just out of expediency? Like, or were you thinking, I want to become a voice caller?
No, I was using it to kill turkeys. That was it.
So if I had given you a bunch of turkey calls, you might not have learned.
Right.
Okay. Announcer?
Contestant number one, can we please now hear your fighting purr?
Actually, this was big.
Is this a true call?
Oh, yeah. When two gobblers meet or two hens, and you can tone it down from one to the other, but...
Ten.
Yeah.
You judging now, Dirk?
Yeah.
Hit him again, Mark.
Yeah, yeah. How about the Kiki run?
And that's a close one. I barely can do that one, but
okay. But first, can you explain to me the turkey sounds, kiki, kiki run, like all these things?
Most generally, it's the fall of the young, young of the fall turkeys, babies that haven't developed the voice enough. And you'll hear it break at the end sometimes. Sometimes it won't break. They'll kiki nonstop. But I've heard hens that do it. That Henrietta turkey, she used to do it when she was 5-6 years old. She would kiki. They can do it if they want to do it. Now, babies in the fall, they don't have the voice box. They do it just because they're trying. They can't yelp. But I've heard them hens do that kiki run in the spring. And, like, I don't have video of her, but she would do it when she was older.
Yeah, let me hear the noise. That just means follow me.
I'm not sure what the kiki run is from a mature hen. I don't know what that means. I really don't know why they do it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But
Mark?
Well, what do we have left? Do we want to hear the fight on cackle again? Do we want to hear the
I can't.
Do the putts.
I'll do the feed and purr.
How about an alarm putt?
Yeah.
Hold your ears. No, it's not. But. And my putt and cluck sound so much alike, you know.
Yeah, but a real hen's putt and cluck
sound alike too.
Yeah,
it's much louder.
Half the time I'm in the woods going, "Damn it, I screwed up again."
And you have,
but yeah, here she comes.
Yeah,
she's coming all the way in, and I'm like, "Oh, she's not putting."
Isn't the cadence different though on the alarm putt?
Like, oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure.
So what was it like when you were growing up in Missouri? What'd your old man do for a living?
He worked for the State Department, and he wasn't around very often. And it was, you know, I lived in Tuscumbia, Missouri. It was population 200. You know, we didn't even have a stoplight. We had a stop sign, a bank, a church, and a bar, and a school.
So were you the kind of kid that hung out by yourself?
You know, I mean, it was hard not to be popular because there was only like 15 of us in my class. So you were popular whether you wanted to be, but no, I wasn't popular. But it was a great place to grow up, but I was a hellion.
You were a hellion?
Yeah, I was a hellion.
Like what? Like, tell me some bad things you did.
I shot a lot of turkeys.
But you mostly ran around out in the woods.
Yeah.
Because, like, after the last couple of days, I can just tell. Like, I've only known you for a few days to hang out with. But you're like what I would call, like, a woodsman. A term that I do not throw around.
Well.
There's a lot of guys like to go hunt, but they're not like a woodsman.
And that's just it. I don't hunt at all anymore. I mean, I can't remember the last thing I harvested. Other than the bird that was pooping over the windowsill. You know, I mean.
Relocated.
I mean. It's just, I love, like, you guys being here and the success you guys had. That's where I get my charge of it. And, you know, seeing the conservation efforts that have been made for the wild turkey, not only for the wild turkey, but for the, to bring up a bad but good point. When I was a kid growing up, you would talk to guys, "Did you see anything today?" I shot the hell out of this bush, but, you know, it turned out it wasn't a turkey, or I shot at one 70 yards and there was accidents and, you know, I had a really good friend of mine got shot turkey hunting, and I got him into the sport, and, you know, he got shot his second time ever being out.
How'd that happen?
He was hunting a public land there close to home, and he was calling a gobbler, and he said he was just about ready to shoot it, and it saw him and run off. And he said he was just sitting there. And he said he looked and he seen a guy walking up to him, and he waved at him, and he didn't have his gloves on, which, who cares? You know, a man looks about as much like a turkey as I look like an elephant, you know. But he waved at him, and he said, as soon as I waved at him, he threw his gun up, and he said, I knew he was going to shoot me, and he he put his hand over his eyes and saved his eyes, but he had 40 some pellets up his arm and in his skull. And
holy shit.
But you don't hear about that anymore, and it's through the conservation efforts of this country and, you know, educating people that you don't shoot until you are sure of your target.
There was a kid that was at one of the Turkey Federation things who was an expert voice caller. The story was he became good at it because his old man shot him in a turkey hunting accident and damaged his voice box.
Yep, that's a true story.
And now he can call turkeys like, I don't even, you know, I try to think of like what word would describe that story. It's not irony, but there's some bizarreness to that story.
Yep. And you can't ever take that, you know, that trigger pull back.
But I don't understand, like, if you talk to guys soon, it's like, oh, so you thought that you saw a man's hand, and in your mind was, oh, there's a turkey, and I'm verifying that it is a bearded turkey and therefore legal, and I'm verifying that I'm holding on the wattles.
Yeah.
You're not doing all that.
No, you're not. You're shooting that movement. But that was, we had 10, 15 accidents a year in the state of Missouri back in my day.
My buddies from Missouri have a good story about watching an acquaintance of theirs. They just happen to be perched up and watch this guy like belly crawling on a bird in a field that was gobbling. And the guy got up and shot a fence post. The bird was still like 50 yards farther, never saw it, and just reared up and shot this fence post. Then stood up and like walked over there and realized there was no turkey. Not even close.
So. He was trying to help the quail by killing the fence post.
Yeah, it was too close.
But it's because there was such a lack of, it was like you had to take every split second decision to shoot something. Like,
yeah. It was just, and the pride and ego, which is downfall of the majority of us guys. But, you know, now through their efforts, you know, they had the safe sticker on the end of the gun, you know, and everybody made fun of it. I didn't make fun of it. I thought that was a great idea.
The,
you know,
safe
you,
sticker?
Yeah, it was a Be Safe sticker that you put on the end of your, when you put your gun up, it was on the, whatever, is that the riser or whatever?
Yeah.
So you had to see that sticker before you, made you think that one little bit. But it's went downhill. There's hardly any now. You know, one or two a year, and it's usually somebody dropping a gun or.
Right.
So some level of education took shape.
Very much so, yeah.
You know what I was saying, how I think of you as a woodsman after walking around with you? The reason I bring that up is our friend Pat Durkin, we were talking to him, and he's talking about these guys that get so good at killing whitetails. This will interest you, Mark. These guys get so good at killing whitetails and like killing machines, you know, but they can't tell you what tree their tree stand's hanging in. They don't know what kind of tree.
Yeah.
Like they learn some aspect of hunting, but they don't learn the package of it. But you, when you're out in the woods, you know your trees, you know your plants, you're observing all of the things around you, and you're curious about the vocalizations, and you don't even care to be the guy hunting.
Could care less. There's something to learn every time we go out there. You know, nature, the woods are changing every single second of every day, and you know, we decimated our forests back at the turn of the century, and they've come back, and we're learning as a nation that you have to take care of it by eradicating fire and fescue and fence-to-fence planting. In my opinion, someday she's going to get tired of it. You know, we got to do our part as sportsmen to give back. We got to take care of our woods and our fields and our forests and our wildlife. Have to. We owe it to the next generation, our children.
When you were growing up, did you see a lot of areas get destroyed?
Yeah.
Over the course of your lifetime?
I did. One of the most painful ones was in Alabama that we hunted. And, it was one of the few places I ever got to hunt that was virgin timber. And there was white oak trees, and it was 280 acres, and me and the buddy that I hunted with down there, Barry, we could hold hands and not touch, I mean, around the majority of the white oak trees on that place. And that grandfather passed away and left it to his grandson, and on the one condition that it didn't get clear cut, that nothing happened to it, it was never to be logged. Which I'm not sure that I agree with the never being logged stuff, but something that pristine and that beautiful, yeah, I agreed with it. And I remember we went down there one year, and that his nephew had found a way around it, and it was a clear cut field when we got there.
It's the logging thing is tricky, and the main, when I was a little kid, the main area we could go and hunt, I mean, we could like take 22s and walk out our door,
yeah,
and go hunt squirrels.
I remember those days, yeah.
And you had to, you would like take 22s, whatever, cross a road, and you'd go into a small wood lot, which my old man owned a chunk of. Then you'd go down and cross Mueller Road and pass into a big woods because it was owned by a summer camp. And it came to be that the summer camp sold it, and whoever got it was came in to log it. Okay. And these are big white pines and big oaks. And they came in to log it, and we were like the monkey wrench gang, man, because we don't want to log it. And we noticed that the guys came in and would go around writing no cut on some trees. And my old man had gotten all this paint at a White Elephant sale, and we had a sprayer. And I remember me and my brother, we were, I think I was 13 or 14. I remember because right around the time I was peeling logs for 35 cents a foot at a place that made log homes. And we kept mixing that paint to try to get it to match exactly the paint that said no cut. And then went all over out in the woods writing no cut.
Love it.
On stuff, which didn't work. And then they cut it, okay? So it was just, it was squirrel woods. Then they cut that forest, select cut, not clear, but select cut it. And it was a couple years later, and we had deer.
Yep.
And there wasn't deer anywhere.
Amazing.
Near. I mean, it was like you would, there would be now and then a deer somewhere. If you crossed the next road, White Lake Drive, and passed into this other woods, you could possibly run into a deer. They logged that thing, and we jumped a ruffed grouse in there.
Great.
A few years later, which never happened. And we actually went and hunted deer in that woods.
All right, that's
after
that's
it was logged. And then that caused me to have sort of a, like an awareness of sort of like a managed forest, right? Or like how you could, that something you think is negative, like, oh, logging's so bad. But then it created this thing.
Yep.
And it wasn't like this is old growth because it got logged off during the logging boom anyways.
Right.
It was something of a more cyclical nature. But if you went there now, there's nothing. Because then what happened was development. And someone came in and scratched it all off into lots.
And made a field out of it.
It's just houses.
Yeah.
It's houses. It's just gone now. And now it's now like what I used to think is like, oh, they're gonna log it, it's gonna be gone or it's gonna be ruined. No. It's gone. When you build, like, when you develop it.
Yes, sir.
That's gone.
Well,
it was developed by the guys that, you know, it was developed by the guys I went to high school with. It was like, not like an evil thing happened or someone did it with malintent. It's just like the fact is now nothing's there.
Yep.
Well, there's some squirrels running around that you can't hunt because it's people's yards.
That's why they make pellet guns, right? I'm a fan of logging when it's, you know, selective harvest. It's a renewable resource, just like cutting a field of grass for hay. If you don't, it's just going to go to waste. You know, utilize it. And you can, if you do it right, you can help your forest in so many ways. You can help your forest and your wildlife.
Yeah.
Have you ever been around when they've done those ring? They bore into the tree and take it out, and the rings on the wood and tells you how many years old the tree is.
No, I just know you're counting them on the stump.
Yeah, well, they got a machine, or it's a little handheld deal that bores into the tree, and it takes out a tube of the tree, for lack of a better word, and they can count the rings. And you can see that tree's life, where it had a drought year or it had a lot of rain or it's starting to get enclosed. It's got too many trees around it. And the rings will get shorter and shorter and shorter as the forest matures. And you do a selective harvest in an area like that and come back in 10 years and do that same thing. And those rings are so far apart, you can't even, it doesn't even look like it's the same tree.
Like that tree's kicking ass afterward.
Yeah. Now it's got room to grow and there's some light through the forest. And we as human beings, we want to see, well, I don't, and I'm sure you guys don't either, as being hunters, but people want to see a pristine forest. I hate that word, you know, pristine. There's no such thing as pristine in a forest. If it's pristine, it needs some work. You know, if you can look 600 yards through an oak forest, there's nothing there. There's a few acorns at the end of August that last, what, 2 weeks, and then there's nothing. You need to cut that and open the timber up and allow some sunlight so you can have growth for deer and nesting cover for your turkeys. And deer see food and this 4 foot, 4 foot of cover. They don't care about what's above them. They want something that they can hide in, and even a wild turkey does too. Now, yeah, they like their open areas, but they need security.
This is a little off topic. Do you remember what it was they were giving out at that turkey calling contest for a prize?
Yeah, it's this ginormous trophy, the only trophy I've ever, well, that and co-ed softball. That's the only two trophies I got in my house.
You still got it now?
Yeah.
You carry it around with you now?
Yeah, I do. It's one of the only ones I kept. And that's not true. I won the Illinois Open and the Oklahoma Open and some other little contest, but I don't have any of those trophies anymore, but I do have that one.
Is there groupies in mouth turkey calling?
I don't know. I got so far away from it. You know, I haven't done it in so long. But there were some super guys that were in there, yeah. It's a good group of fellas.
And then you got into turkey guiding turkey hunting.
Yep.
When you're doing that, are you mostly enjoying it or mostly not enjoying the company of the people you're guiding?
You know, it's when you don't do it for money, the ego and pride leave and the enjoyment of it come in.
Whose ego and pride?
Not mine. I have none left. But when somebody's paying you for a service, they expect results. So it puts pressure on you to make those results. And a lot of times, like today, a turkey doesn't want to cooperate, and you really can't make them do what they don't want to do. And, you know, I got enough pressure in my life. I don't need that. But, you know, like Saturday, I live for those days. You know.
So you felt that guiding, you felt that the transaction of it made it less fun.
Yep.
Because the hunter had expectations.
Right. And I haven't taken money for guiding, other than a few tips. I tried to talk them out of giving me to them, but they still give me. But I haven't took money for guiding, and gosh, I don't even know how long it's been. A long time.
And that makes you feel better about it?
A lot better, yeah. Yep.
What were some of the things you seen people do when you were guiding that you didn't really like?
Oh, Lord. One, I'm not going to name the guy's name, because I don't know what the statute of limitations is, but he was a baseball player he played for the Mets. He held the record for getting hit by a pitch the most in one single season. It was like 120 times he got hit by a pitch. Mean, horrible, rough man that just was soft on the inside, you know. A good, solid guy, but he just didn't put up with nothing, you know. Everything was a bench-clearing brawl if it didn't go right.
And you feel that that's a symptom of being soft on the inside?
Yeah, he was a super soft guy. He was a good guy. I really liked him, you know, even to this day. He's a super guy.
I don't really understand what you're saying. You're saying that he would fly off the handle.
Yeah.
But, and that being a result of him being soft on the inside.
Trying to hide it, that's my opinion.
I understand what you're saying.
That's my opinion of him, but
he had soft tendencies, but didn't like that about himself.
Wasn't going to show it. And okay. He would go over the top and pummel you if you thought that of him, which if he hears this podcast, he's probably going to pummel me, but that's all right.
Well, we'll pummel him right back.
But I took him out. He aggravated me for 2 years to take him turkey hunting, so I took him. We go out, and it was kind of raining that morning, and I set up under a cedar tree in a glade, and it was, I don't know, it was probably 10 o'clock, and I didn't want to be there, you know, because, one, it's raining, and the sun, it stops raining, the sun breaks through, and me and him are sitting there shoulder to shoulder, first time he's ever been turkey hunting. It was April 29th, a Friday. I remember it like it was yesterday.
Man, I'm waiting for something real bad to happen.
It's pretty bad. And this turkey gobbles just out of the blue, about 250 yards down off this glade. And we're in a perfect spot. I'm like, you got to be kidding me, you know? I get him around, get his gun up, and the rain is dripping off the cedar trees, and there's just that little bit of mist, you know? And I just... I was like, all right, Ron, get...
That's him gobbling.
Yeah, I mean, he just...
So that was almost... You could have confused that with the guy shooting.
Sorry.
Yeah, we go. No, you're talking.
So, skidding around, get his gun set up, and through this glade, out steps a hen. Just a beautiful little hen, and she... back at me, and I call to her, and he gobbles, and he steps out behind her, and it's just one of those turkeys that you never get a chance. You know, he's got a foot-long beard. It looks like it's big as a Coke can. It's just a humongous turkey. This is what you live for, you know? And I'm telling him, bro, this is the biggest turkey I've seen this year. Please, you know, take your time. He said, I got this. I'm like, all right. So I call a couple more times.
Can you hit that gobble again when it's the right moment?
I was like, this is it. You know, he gobbles straight at us. 150 yards, 100 yards. And the hen, she's about 15 or 20 yards ahead of him. She's just walking and feeding, you know. And she gets in about 25 yards, and he's about 50. And he's just beautiful. The sun's shining off of him. And I'm like, how am I going to talk this guy into mounting this turkey, you know? Because it's a trophy turkey. And I said, all right, let him take a few more. Kaboom!
And the hen
just explodes into a cloud of feathers.
Oh my gosh.
What in the beep, beep, and beep, you beeping idiot? Well, I got the idiot out, and that was the end of my trash talking him. I got a stern lesson in that he was paying me for a service. He came here to kill a turkey, and by Lord above, that's what he did. And if I didn't like it, I could march my butt right on back to the truck, which is exactly what I did. I left him with his turkey right there in the woods and left.
Professional baseball player.
Yeah.
Shot the hen.
And he packed that thing around and showed it to people. They would have hung me. They would have put me under the prison, you know, but not him. He takes it and goes off and just as happy as he can be. It's like never again. I never took him again either. Never.
Soft inside.
Soft inside, but that was his claim to fame.
Giannis does this. You do it, and Giannis does it. I'm trying to learn how to do it. Where, let's say, if I meet someone who's just terrible, you know, I'll just be like, I don't like that guy. But Yanni will try to find out what it is that makes the guy that way.
That's a tendency for me too.
And then. Right? You give him like the credit of the problem. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. As opposed to just writing it off.
You'd be like, yeah, but he. As an explanation. I think it's a more like gracious way to go through life. Yeah, but he had a lot of problems with his dad.
I understand.
As a way to like excuse a sort of behavior.
Us men all have our faults. All of us.
Yeah, dirt.
I got no faults. Well, I guess chewing.
So, you're like a hunter who doesn't hunt.
That's it. I refuse.
Refuse.
Other than the relocation of a pest from time to time, other than that, I'll never kill another animal out of pleasure.
Steve's speechless.
Yeah, a little bit speechless.
This is unique.
A little bit speechless.
Well, if
at a point, do you imagine a point in your life where you say, not only will I will not assist in the killing of another animal?
Too much pleasure from people. Too much excitement. I enjoy seeing that, the look on people's faces. Kids, women, adults, it doesn't matter. I enjoy the excitement of it and seeing the thrill.
Do you take your own kids hunting?
Very much, yeah.
Do you take them hunting and then think, like, well, I hope that they'll arrive at a point where they don't want this anymore like I did?
Yeah, I do. I hope that someday they reach the point where they want to help others see what they've got to see in their lives.
So what is it what is it that you're helping people to see?
That there's another side to turkey hunting and deer hunting. That it's, and I don't want to offend or ruffle any feathers, but
please, don't worry about that.
All right. Well, it's not about selling the next product or making the next invention. You know, Tom Kelly he's the greatest. He loathed decoys. He didn't feed corn. He didn't do anything wrong. He just hunted turkeys. He wanted that battle of him against a turkey. And it's personal for me to match wits with one of them, to know what he's thinking before he realizes what he's thinking. And by the time he realizes he's messed up, he's laying on his back looking at the last sunset or sunrise he'll ever see. And that's because I fail so many times that when I finally succeed, it's just, I enjoy seeing that in other people's eyes. When my son, he was 8 years old when he killed his first deer with a bow. And he physically couldn't get out of the tree. We had to sit there for an hour because his legs shook so bad. I knew that was it for me. I will never get that level of excitement. And why? Why would I kill anything if I'm not going to be excited about it to his level? And he still gets that way. He still gets, if it's a doe or a 10-point buck, he still, both my kids are still that way.
So the fun vanished.
I don't know if the fun is there. I love going out with them and sitting in the tree with them, and even with my wife. I enjoy sitting with her. I enjoy hunting with anybody that gets an excitement level out of it. But what I'm trying to say is, why would I harvest an animal if I can't get as excited as they could about it?
I understand what you're getting at, but it's hard for me to... I understand like the structure of what you're saying, but it's hard for me to understand a little bit. Because, for instance, when I was kids, we were hell on chipmunks, okay?
Yeah.
We learned how to hunt by hunting chipmunks. Today, I was having a conversation with Giannis about how we were listening to some chipmunks. I'll say, man, we used to just really hunt hard. If we heard a chipmunk cutting loose, chirping,
yeah,
we'd get BB guns and go after it. But we didn't eat the chipmunks, okay?
Right.
So I would now, when I'm out with my kid, and he's got that little kid thing where they want to get everything in the woods, I'm like, no, because that's, right, we're out here for squirrels. I'm not going to do that. That's not something people eat. It's not something we're going to eat. So no.
Yeah.
But here I am, okay? So here I am, like, I've engaged in this activity. I used to engage in this activity, and it's something I enjoy doing, and I learned how to hunt that way. But I've decided that I'm like, you know what? I don't like that happened.
Right.
Looking back on it, I'm now going to tell my kid not to do something that I did.
My kids are raised very differently than I was raised.
So that is true.
Very true. Very different than I was raised. You know, my mom and dad worked daylight to dark. I can remember packing a shotgun to school.
Yeah.
I was 7 miles from my house to school. I would turkey hunt all the way to school, leave my shotgun and my camouflage leaned up against a big oak tree on the south of the playground. I'd go to school. I'd come out of school, pick my stuff up, and walk back home. It wasn't. It was just part of it. I mean,
I want to go to that school.
I remember when they banned guns on campus.
Yep.
And we'd always go hunting after school, and I'd run my trap lines after school. And I remember we went down saying, "Well, this isn't going to work because, right? Have to have it." And like, "Oh yeah, you know that's okay. That's not what we meant." It was just you just had to go let the principal know that you weren't going to follow that rule, and he'd suss out whether he thought it was okay for you to not follow it or not.
Yep.
It was different times back then, too.
Different times. Every guy in our class had a gun rack and a gun in his back of his truck. You know, I mean, it was part of our culture. And we've let that go because of some bad decisions of a few messed up people.
Yeah.
We've all got to pay for it.
Yeah.
But I got to tell a story on my dad, and then I'm done. Because you brought up the chipmunk, shooting the chipmunks. Mine was turkeys, all right? My dad had this box of paper Peters shotgun shells.
Okay.
25 of them.
I mean, when they used to not be plastic, but paper.
Paper. And my great
casing was paper. Casing. A lot of people probably don't know this.
The casing was paper. My great-grandfather, who I'm named after, gave him those shells, and he was so proud of them. Well, January 1st, I got banned from using the shotgun. I couldn't kill turkeys anymore. I was in trouble, bad grades. I couldn't hunt that spring. Well, that just tore me up. So he took all my shells.
How bad were the grades? Like bad, bad?
Yeah, they were bad. And I was steady.
Are you not academically inclined?
No. I graduated with 0.1%, one percentage point, you know. If there was classes on turkeys and deer hunting, I would have aced it. But I didn't have time for school. There was hunting and drinking beer and other things to do.
But you knew how to read good.
Well, I did.
Yeah.
And I'm not superbly stupid. I've made some bad decisions, but I'm not complete idiot. But anyway, those shells set inside this little drawer where we had dinner at. And so turkey season come around, and I'll sit there one morning, and this turkey starts gobbling across from the house. So I got it. He had an old 12 gauge that he left in the corner, an old model 97 Winchester. I got one paper shell out of there. Slid it in the gun, closed it. It closed. You know, everything was good. I wonder. So they were off to work. I sneak up the ridge, and the gun goes off, and I kill the turkey. Well, the paper, as you know, it doesn't expand like today's plastic shells. So I just took all the shells upside down and put the paper one on the bottom.
That's good thinking.
Yeah.
No one's ever going to know.
No one's ever going to know. Fast forward three turkey seasons. And grades hadn't gotten any better. And I was keeping the local neighbors supplied in turkey breast, but we had this couple. My mom worked for this guy, and real highfalutin guy, and mom and dad and mom, they cleaned the house, did everything, had this big dinner for them. They come over to the house, and we're all sitting around the table, and we just finished eating, and my dad says to the other guy, you know, you ever deal with guns? And he says, "Oh yeah, yeah." And he gets up and he goes out in the car and he brings back this gun. He says, "This gun my great grandfather gave me." And I thought, "Oh shoot." He says, "I got something my grandpa gave me." And he turns around and he reaches in that box and he picks up this empty case of paper shotgun shells. And right in the middle of dinner, he just chucks them at me. "You little beep 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 beep." I knew better. I knew it. So we have this huge family squabble in front of this highfalutin couple that mom and dad really laid out the red carpet for, because I shot every single one of those shells. There wasn't a one of them left. I still thank my great-grandpa for that box of shells.
Pooter, did we name all the dishes you cooked?
I think we got through the bulk of them, yeah.
Do you got anything you want to wedge in there? Add on?
Yeah.
Clarify?
Correct. I'd have to say that I learned a lot over the last couple of days about turkey hunting. It was, even though I didn't put one in the freezer.
But
take
you got
home,
your first turkey just last spring.
Sure did. Yeah. Over in Montana.
So now you're learning what it's like to lose.
Yeah.
Instead of just be a winner.
But No, it was very educational because last year when I got it, it was a quick. I had a bird on the ground within an hour of being out and about. So this year was good because I learned way more about the whole process, and obviously I had some good guides to lead that.
What's your favorite thing about Turks so far?
Just the interaction, you know, getting out there and hearing that gobble in the morning.
That insane, crazy, beautiful noise they make.
Amen. Yeah. And then just to kind of have that conversation with them. Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it, even though it didn't turn out in my favor. I really, really enjoyed getting out there and sitting and just covering some ground and seeing what it was all about. And hopefully do it again next spring.
Oh, you'll get one next spring, man. Not a doubt in my mind. Mm-mm. Mark Kenyon.
Final thoughts?
Yeah. How's them flip-flops feeling?
Real good. Got to air these puppies, man. Out.
Yeah, you aired them things out at night.
I was wearing the big stomp clompers all day. Rubber boots, so needed these pretty badly. Final thoughts? It was just a great weekend. I mean, yesterday was a lot of fun. Me and Dirt were able to get the job done first thing in the morning, which was a blast. And then, probably other than that, though, and the camaraderie, what stands out is Pooter, the founder of the feast. You put on an unbelievable culinary.
Good to hear.
Extravaganza.
I think I gained 10 pounds this year.
Some great, great food.
Pooter's my favorite cook.
He's mine now, too.
Mine, too.
Good taste, yeah. Mine as well.
Good to hear.
It was great. Great time.
Dartmouth.
Yeah, I'd second what Mark said in the two hunts. I got to hunt with Giannis as well. Both Mark and Giannis got their birds. The light for my craft was untouchable. It was just amazing, the beauty of this area. And Michigan was the final state, so in all 50
you've
now.
Now, have you? I want to touch on this.
Yeah.
Do you have to say you've been in the state? Do you figure you got to sleep there, or just you don't count like the airport layover?
No.
So how do you count it?
Yeah, like get a sense of the area.
Okay.
Even if it's brief, but yeah, not counting like a connection flight or anything.
Doesn't need to be a sleepover.
No, but I think I have probably every state had it, at least a night plus. I did a big trip. It's too long to get into it, but yeah, I felt like all the states prior to Michigan was more than just a check on the board, and now Michigan fills that same kind of role. It was an amazing time here.
Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, Dartmouth,
50 states.
Yeah, you can look down on him because he's a slave to a substance and doesn't have the level of discipline to stop doing something that's killing him by rotting his jaw off. However,
there is always a balance.
But however, he's visited all 50 states.
Is there like a term for that? Is there a title? Like there's the Turkey Grand Slam holder. Is there like
state Grand Slam?
You're Grand Slam holder.
State Grand Slam.
I'll be.
Yeah, I'm at 49. There's one missing.
A good one.
You got any?
What's that?
You got any questions for him to? Yeah.
On how to close her down? Yeah. The one missing for me is Louisiana.
Which surprises
and
me.
I know, because we were on our way there. I tell the story all the time. We're on our way there. We are down in Mississippi. I think we started out in Memphis. We're headed through Mississippi. Got to, like, Clarksdale, home of the blues.
Yep. Crossroads.
Went to the crossroads. We went to the crossroads where supposedly Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil. I was like, I'm going to get out of the car. My friend Anna was like, don't get out of the car. And then continued on our way, and we're going to New Orleans.
Yeah.
And on the news is like, there's like a big weather event fixing to happen. And the more we go, the more serious the weather event is, and it winds up being that there's closing some stuff and evacuating some stuff, and we bail. That was Hurricane Katrina.
Dang. Oh.
So it wasn't fated, if you're
so
into
it
that.
Was like, so we could have made it into town in time to take part in that whole rodeo.
Good decision.
Which would have, yeah, left an imprint from Louisiana.
Oh, speaking of calling that a rodeo, there's a clarification the guy wrote in I want to touch on real quick, where he says that he was saying getting Western and getting squirrely are very different.
Oh, I'd agree.
Getting Western means risk of injury.
How would I describe Western?
Physical danger.
Squirrely, I would say, too.
Yeah, he's like, you could, like, mess up the fletching on your arrow and it shoots a little squirrely.
Yeah, or like Garrett was giving me eyes today in the blind, and Garrett's fixing to get a little squirrely. Western's far different.
Yeah, Garrett, yeah.
If you're in a, physical harm.
If you're in a blind with another man, and you were to say, man, I thought I was going to get Western in there. That's different than...
Someone's getting shot.
Little, no, I don't know if you said, like, I was in a blind with dirt, and things got a little squirrely.
No harm done.
But his clarification was that there has to be a risk of physical harm is implicit within Western, and squirreliness does not...
It's lighthearted.
Yeah. Something being a little squirrely doesn't mean that the physical harm is going to result from that. Giannis, did you have any final thoughts?
We always say Western when there's hunting, when there's like too much shooting going on. Like when your first shot didn't really connect properly, but you decided to keep on shooting. Things got a little Western.
Things got a little Western. Yeah.
Dude got like Western
like
tonight.
Like a shootout.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that was...
So what is it when you get Eastern? Things got a little Eastern.
I don't know. What got Western tonight?
That guy with the...
the guy that was just shooting up a storm.
Oh, yeah. Right, the neighbor.
Steve texts us. He's like, if that gun ain't sighted now, I don't know what that
Yeah, but that's just coming from a guy who's sort of like, I used to love to just shoot. When we were kids, we'd just go shoot. For Christmas, we'd get those, you know, they sell those milk cartons full of 22 ammo.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we'd just go like burn through a whole milk carton of 22 rounds. Now...
Dollar signs.
Not even that. It's just like now I just, it's just very like, it's like a functional thing. Like I no longer just like to just go down and just what we call plinking.
Yeah.
Just blast. It's just loud.
Yeah.
It's like loud.
That wasn't a 22 today.
Mm-mm. Oh, no. It was.
But I mean, worked in the 22 later.
Yeah. Double combo was like, fireworks show.
Yeah, just my view on recreational shooting is it's just like loud, you know. And when we used to just shoot all the time, I never thought about what it means for some guy who's out like we were tonight. Like that guy, he's oblivious to the fact that we're out creeping around the woods.
Yeah,
bosh, 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 bosh. You know,
we were trying to film an interview, and we had like 10 different takes where I'd start and then start shooting, stop again. Like okay, wait, okay, now go, bam, bam, bam.
That was getting Western for sure.
It was squirrely. I thought it was decided.
Somebody could have gotten harmed.
It was decidedly squirrely. Giannis, any
I think I'm going to go home and you know, we have a giant flock of chickens, but I think what I'm missing at home is a couple Henriettas.
Yeah, he was telling me this tonight when we were sitting there just observing you and Poots hunt.
I'm not saying I'm going to become a voice caller. But I figure by next spring turkey season, you won't even be able to get near me. My turkey calling skills.
I could no better teacher.
Spend a whole year with Henrietta.
Just listening.
Yeah.
That's your concluder?
Yeah.
Right. Do you guys have room for a turkey?
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to this.
Plenty.
So, Guy Zuck. Can you tell us what was your guys' family name before you guys shortened it to Zuck?
Zuckin hyphen Snyder or something.
Guy Zuck, thank you for coming on the show and talking about turkey calling.
Guys, I just want to say it was a pleasure having y'all, and give a shout out to our host. Thanks to him for letting us be together, and I hope to do it all again someday.
We'll be back here. This is a fun place to hang out, so thank you.
Going to hold you to that.
We're coming.
All right, brother. Enjoyed it.